Today's Second Testament reading is Luke chapter 9, verses 28 to 43, found in your pew Bibles on page 71. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. But since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. On the next day, when they had come down from the mountain, a great crowd met him. Just then a man from the crowd shouted, "Teacher, I beg you to look at my son. He is my only child." Suddenly a spirit seizes him, and all at once he shrieks. It throws him into convulsions until he foams at the mouth. It mauls him and will scarcely leave him. "I begged your disciples to cast it out, but they could not." Jesus answered, "You faithless and perverse generation, how much longer must I be with you and bear with you? Bring your son here." While he was coming, the demon dashed to the ground in convulsions. But Jesus rebuked the unclean spirit, healed the boy, and gave him back to his father. And all were astounded at the greatness of God. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
This is my we're asking the Epiphany question. What does God, through the presence of the living Christ, desire to make manifest in us in these days? What does God, through the presence of the living Christ, desire to make manifest to us, in us, in the days ahead? And in the bulletin, you'll see something called Lenten experiments. And I'm hoping that even during the season of Lent, you might take what God is speaking to you about Epiphany into Lent. And maybe it's initiating a certain conversation, or it's gathering with people or a person, a friend, around something that connects you to seeking peace and well-being. And call that your Lenten experiment. One person's response last week as they've been reflecting and trying to listen to God in Epiphany was, "Know thy word." Simply, "Know thy word," or "Know my word." And so she wanted me to share that, or I think she did. I won't name who it was, but "Know my word." And so the challenge for her was just wrestling with listening to God through his word in the weeks ahead. Let's quickly reflect on what we've been moving through over Epiphany. Baptism of Jesus Sunday, we've reflected on that. We've thought about our identity as the beloved. We've talked about how our identity might then play itself out in the real world. We've talked about, where do we see God? We spent a couple of weeks talking about the gifts of the Spirit, and even talking about what gifts of the Spirit are present in our community of faith these days. We talked about wisdom, the gift of knowledge, the gift of healing, the gift of discernment, the gift of faith as being present gifts in our community these days. And we reflected on what it means to encounter God in community and even in conundrum, as we talked about Isaiah last week in the Isaiah chapter 6 text. So on Transfiguration Sunday, we're going to talk about transfiguration and transformation. And what I'm hoping to get across is that when we think about transfiguration, it's not just trying to be like Peter and preserve this moment of transfiguration, but it's also thinking about how transfiguration is connected to transformation. And what does it look like for us to be this community of faith that experiences spiritual formation, and might I say transformation, in every generation? This past week, I was talking to the staff and naming it as Intergenerational Spiritual Formation, ISF, the quick acronym. But how does intergenerational spiritual formation play itself out amongst us? Because we recognize that we're all encountering God, from the youngest of us to the oldest of us. We're encountering God, and whether it's that terror-filled, crazy worship experience like Isaiah experienced last week, or whether it's like today's text, the sleepy disciples trying to understand what's going on and allowing this God encounter to form them, to change them. And so in the same way, how does this God encounter change us, form us, transform us? May the Lord continue to be the source of our transformation as we be peace and well-being in the city. So I just want to talk about two different movements in today's text. And the first one is about being transfigured into glory. In verse 31 of Luke 9, they appeared in glory, being transfigured into glory. And let's get it clear right from the beginning here that transfiguration is not about moral get-betterness. It's not about us encountering God and then pulling ourselves up by our bootstraps, so to speak, and trying to be better Christians or trying to try harder. Transfiguration is about God's glory, the revealing of God's glory. And it's not about the disciples oohing and aahing at the glimmering faces and the white robes of Jesus. It's for the disciples and us as followers of Christ to catch a glimpse of the glory, to experience presence of God, to experience the holiness of God. As one writer wrote, there is a hidden holiness which exists in, with, and under ordinary things and ordinary people. And so this week, I'd encourage you to reflect on this transfiguration story and embrace mystery and wonder. I want to relate it even to us here. A couple weeks ago, we commissioned and said a blessing for our newly renovated chapel. And if you walk into the chapel, if you walked in there lately, you see that there's lots going on, or I hope you see lots going on. There's a picture in there that virtually the size of the whole wall, and it was done in 1993 by an artist named Erica Grimm Vance. And I'm sure some of us might walk in there and try to figure out that picture. But if you talk to artists, there isn't just one meaning to what artists create, correct? Artists, can you give me a nod? There may be some intention, but there's mystery. And so as you walk into our prayer chapel, walk in there not trying to figure everything out. And we've bought a prayer labyrinth so that you can walk a prayer labyrinth. And as you walk through the prayer labyrinth, at different points where you pause in the prayer labyrinth, you face different walls and different spaces in the chapel. And so you might find yourself pausing and looking at the painting. Or you might find yourself pausing and looking at the cross. Or the communion table that has the Kairo symbol on it. Or you might find yourself pausing and looking at the colored windows. Or you might find yourself pausing and looking at the blue wall. Or you might find yourself pausing and looking at the dark orange warm wall. There's mystery and wonder there. And so I'd encourage you to use that as a place where you immerse yourself in mystery and wonder. And that's what the Transfiguration is about. It's about being a place and a time where the disciples and where we, as we read the story, immerse ourselves in mystery and wonder. The context is this. It's just after Jesus has pronounced his journey to the cross. It's just after Peter has said, "Jesus, you are the Messiah, the Son of God." It's just as Jesus has told his disciples to follow me. And this way of following is going to be a way of challenge, joy, but also suffering. And it's in the middle of the night. And Jesus has gone with a few of his disciples to pray. And in the midst of this prayer encounter, Jesus, Peter, James, and John are privy to this incredible vision where Jesus' face changes, where Jesus' clothes become dazzling white, where two saints appear, these men of God, Moses and Elijah. And who knows how they recognized Moses and Elijah? What must they have looked like? Can you imagine that? What was it? Because it wasn't like they had seen pictures of these guys before, right? There's Moses and Elijah. And they appeared in glory. And Moses and Elijah are speaking to Jesus about his exodus, his departure in Jerusalem. And though the disciples are weighed down with sleep, they're doing their best to comprehend what's unfolding before them. This is in the middle of the night. I thought about when Sandy and I experienced the earthquake in Southern California in 1994. It was a 6.7 magnitude earthquake. And it's 4:30 in the morning, and Sandy was always feeling earthquakes in California. But on this particular morning, she was really feeling it. And she's shaking me. She's, Ryan, wake up, wake up, wake up. We're having an earthquake. And there I am, trying to wake up at 4:30 in the morning. And seeing the walls shake. And thank God I didn't have to run for a doorframe, because I didn't get it. And by the time I got what was happening, it was over. And so the disciples here are weighed down with sleep and trying to make sense, coming out of this groggy haze. And so then Peter blurts out that pretty famous statement, "Let us make three dwelling places. If I could bottle this up." And in the wake of this exclamation, a big, ominous, billowy cloud enfolds them. And out of the cloud, God speaks, "This is my Son, my chosen one. Listen to him." And so today, as we reflect on Transfiguration, there's an invitation for us to immerse ourselves in mystery and wonder and to listen to him. So we see this idea of transfigured into glory going on, but then what else is happening? As we read through the last verses of today's text, we see the disciples transformed. But what are they transformed into? And I found it interesting that they're actually transformed into silence. And in verse 36, we read, "They kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen." So we read on, and we read of the demon possession of an only child and the disciples' inability to help and Jesus' chiding comments about faithfulness or their lack of faithfulness, and then finally, this healing that astounds the masses. And it makes me think, what do we do with Transfiguration tomorrow, the Monday after Transfiguration Sunday? Perhaps we do the same thing that disciples do. We're transformed into silence. We keep silent because maybe we don't have any idea what's going on. Or we keep silent because it precludes listening and allows us to make space for God's imperative. God saying, "This is my son, listen to him." And we recognize that this is a long obedience in the same direction, not full of easy answers, but once in a while we get glimpses of glory and brushes with the miraculous. And so as we move through this week, after Transfiguration Sunday, after talking and maybe reading through that text about what it looks like for people to be transfigured into glory, what does it mean for us to be transformed into these silent places where we listen to God? And maybe in the midst of that listening, we become a people who can speak. And one quote that I read, I think, matches our mission statement of seeking the peace and well-being of the city. It's a quote that talks about being shalom bringers, and I'll close with this. Shalom bringers bring a sense of warmth, comfort, hope, and well-being, even before a word is spoken. They themselves are the interlinking, not just their words and actions. They do not talk about religion all the time. They're not constantly telling us to cheer up and look on the bright side. They may not say anything special at all, but when we are with them, we feel understood, accepted, welcomed. When we think of these men and women in our lives, we feel as if God is reaching out to us through them. We know that if God is like them, only much more so, then the universe is in safe hands. The glory of God shines through their faces and touches us through their hands. We call them children of God. So as we spend a moment in silence, may God empower us to be these kind of children. And as we approach this upcoming season of Lent, I would remind us to be these kind of children. These children of God who stay close to Jesus. And perhaps at different moments in the weeks ahead, we hang on to Jesus for our dear lives as he sets his face towards Jerusalem. Let's pray together. And as you're praying, we're going to put into practice a spiritual discipline that even Rose taught us this morning, using our imagination, and even putting into the discipline that Joyce Bellows taught us of last week, spiritual listening. Imagine you are with Jesus. And maybe you'll imagine him in the context of a desert, or maybe shortly after this experience on the mountain during this transfiguration. Imagine you're with Jesus. You've heard him being named and called the Beloved. And he looks at you and me and calls us Beloved. He calls us daughters and sons of God. In a moment of silence, knowing that you are loved, knowing that you are not alone, listen to him. close with a Celtic prayer. Thanks to you, O ever gentle Christ, for raising me from the black and darkness of the night into the kindly light of this day. You pour your life into me, giving me speech, sense, desire, giving me thought and action. You mark the way before me. As I remember saints who have journeyed before me, Lord, teach me the way of their simplicity. Strength with humility, at peace in the love and fear of God. May I also go wherever I am led. On your path, O my God, and not my own, be all my journeying. Rule this heart of mine, that it be only yours. Amen.